Yesterday we celebrated the Milwaukee Bucks winning the NBA title for the first time in 50 years. It was a big occasion for the city, a big occasion for the team. And I wonder how one of our friends, Andrew Bogut, felt about it being a number one pick for the Bucks all those years ago, back in 2005. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Bogut, good morning.
Morning.
How did you feel when you the final siren went, the final whistle went, and the Bucks were champions?
Yeah, really good. Really, really good. Had both the kids in Milwaukee Bucks jumpers, or my wife did anyway, as we watched the game. So being part of kind of that franchise for a number of years, it was always hard to recruit talent. It was always hard to get star players to come there, and real small market, kind of forgotten about side, and to see them win a championship was fantastic. And also, you know, Giannis to be a superstar player of his caliber, an MVP, to re-sign with that small market and bring them a championship. I mean, it's just a great story that I hope more NBAs follow rather than going to that whole super team mentality.
I've heard you talk about the small market situation at Milwaukee before when you're playing at the Bucks and the challenges that go with that. Do we, as a broader sporting community, particularly outside of America, do we sort of not understand the difficulties that small market teams do have against the big juggernauts and the super teams?
Yeah, to an extent. Look, I mean, marketing is one side of the ball. So you go to New York or LA and you're a superstar player. That's, you know, say you sign a 5-year deal in one of those cities, you probably get another, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 million in marketing alone, right?
Yeah.
Being on billboards and all that kind of stuff. But that's the hard one with small markets is that, you know, small markets don't sell out crowds every night because it's a smaller market. You don't have, generally don't have as many TV games on small market team. So there's a number of factors. The draft's really important for small markets. If they screw up the draft, set them back years. Whereas, you know, if you're a big market team, you can screw up the draft, you can screw up a lot of things, but you can just open some briefcases and get a LeBron James or a KD. It can put a Band-Aid on all those problems you had. So, you know, when was the last time you heard Milwaukee have any big free agents even take a pitch meeting when they're a free agent? You just don't hear about it. So, like I said, the Giannis thing for me is just awesome. I think he's a great human being, first and foremost. I'd love to have him as a teammate any day of the week, but the fact that he re-signed to stay there and not go to an LA or New York and team up with LeBron and all these super teams, I think it's great for the league, like I said, and I hope more players follow suit.
So you're relying on culture and personalities, that really loyal personalities to succeed rather than checkbooks?
Correct, and there's probably one out of 100, and that one is Giannis. You know, the stars are always going to jump ship to a better situation. That's just kind of, it is a system in the US to an extent. They have high school basketball over there that then goes into AAU. For those familiar with AAU, they're kind of traveling essentially what a state team would be in Australia. And what we're finding with a lot of those young kids is now they team up at that age. They'll go to they don't have to play for one AAU team. They can go where they want, and they'll all kind of go to one super AAU team. Then that happens in college, and then it happens in the NBA. So you don't blame players as much because it's their upbringing and what they're taught to do, and that's something that's kind of not as big in Europe or Australia.
Do you know Giannis? Like, obviously there's some parallels between both of you, but like, do you know him personally? Because I think how he's conducted himself off the court has almost captured the imagination as much as what he's done on the court, just in the lead up to the final series and ultimately winning the title.
Yeah, I don't know him that well. Just playing against him a few times and just seeing his development from, you know, there's a photo trending of him when he first came in the league and looked like a rake, and now he's now he looks like Hulk, you know. The amazing amount of work he's put into his body and all of that. But yeah, I just think it's a great story. I think it's, you know, he's a great person. I mean, his press conference was as natural and blunt as could be. You know, he values family, and I know they love him in that city, you know, and I think for what he's done, you know, his journey is just an amazing story too, you know, and an immigrant coming to Greece, and then, you know, not knowing the language, selling CDs and electronics on the street side in Greece to make some money for his family as a kid, and then obviously a coach finding himself and his brothers and turning them essentially into NBA players. It's just a sensational story of you know, what he's been through to get there.
So, Andrew, you talked before about the kids in the singlets and all that sort of thing. I mean, you played at five NBA clubs. Do you do you barrack for one, or is it that you just you barrack for the five you play? Like, we were talking to someone from Milwaukee yesterday, and that he was even saying that in Milwaukee, everyone kind of supports the team, but then there are others that support players from other teams. That's just the way it is in America. How do you sort of split your allegiances?
I'd say Golden State and Milwaukee are the two. You know, Milwaukee has a soft spot in my heart because they drafted me. I kind of went from a boy to a man, essentially. That part of my life was spent in Milwaukee, you know, 19, 20 years old into, you know, I was there till I was 27, 28, and then obviously winning the championship with Golden State. So they'd be the top two. Golden State probably just trumps it just because of the championship ring. The other three, nothing with the other three. So, but yeah, look, you make an interesting point. You know, the young kids these days and fans in general, the old school fan of do or die, support my team, it's kind of gone. It's dying. It's probably with us old school fellas that are, you know, talk about stories that, you know, back in my day, it's those kind of guys that support their team through thick and thin, whereas young kids these days, they follow players. It's an unfortunate reality of what we're dealing with, and that's how things have changed. They'll follow a player. Wherever he gets traded or signed to, that'll be their new team. And I guess it helps the NBA because it's more jersey sales and, and more money in their pockets.
Yeah, superstar syndrome's taken over, no doubt, team sports, particularly in the US. What about, while we've got you on the line, might as well talk about the Boomers and the Opals and the basketball and the Olympics coming up. Bogeyman, we've had a fair bit of drama going on from the Opals' perspective with Liz Cambage falling out of favour with the team being cut from the squad. Does that, I mean, they would have gone into that raging hopes of winning a gold medal. How big a blow is that?
Oh, it's a pretty big blow. You know, regardless of Liz's off-court antics and everything she's done, she's one of the best players in the world. So, you know, she's a WNBA MVP candidate the last 3 or 4 years. So you remove that piece from your team now, there's some adjustments that are going to need to be made. But, you know, I commend the girls wanting to make that move. And I guess when Liz made her indiscretions and with everything that's been reported, it's reportedly said that they wanted her off the team before she, you know, before she jumped for mental health reasons. And I commend them for that. You know, I think the culture of your group is more important long-term than probably having someone that's causing a little bit of problems in that, not a little bit, or a fair bit of problems in that locker room. And I think that's the tough decision they had to make. And I think for the betterment of the program, I saw Michelle Tim's comments overnight where she was pretty scathing of it's time to just peel the scab off and move on and not have her in the team ever again. You know, you probably don't want to see that to that extreme, but if she can't buy into what the Opals and even the Boomers are about, then you probably shouldn't be a part of it.
Yeah, well, that's in the girls' perspective. What about the boys with their preparations for the Olympic campaign? It was a great series against the US, Argentina and Nigeria. Really positive outcomes for everyone. Now, the US probably weren't fully wound up, but how much confidence does that give them that they are a legitimate medal hope this time around?
Well, yeah, we're in the mix. We're probably up there with top two favourites, you know. So really, really well-balanced roster. You know, we've got our old heads that we know about, your Dallies and your Joeys, your Bansies, your Patties. But, I mean, the acquisition of Matisse Thybulle for me is going to be huge. I mean, he's a huge X factor. We haven't had an athlete of that caliber on the wings, I don't think, ever in the national team. As far as athleticism and what he brings defensively, he's just that cog that we're probably missing in 2019 and 16. And I think he's going to be the guy to look out for. That's going to, you know, if he plays well and so what he does very well, I think we have a chance to get a medal.
And I'm just interested in your thoughts on Brian Gorgian and the impact he's going to have. Again, we're just talking about how many teams you've played and how many amazing coaches you've had. Where does he stack up and what sort of influence can he have in getting that medal for them?
Well, the biggest thing with Gorgian was coming into that program was not ruffling feathers and throwing, you know, the bathwater out with the baby, kind of. You know, I think it's a team that has been together and you don't want to make too many changes. So I think he accepted that. And that as a coach, sometimes it's hard to accept. You know, I think he understood that this is a group that's been so close. Make a few tweaks here and there maybe, but other than that, they've got their stuff together. So he's understood that. He gets the most out of his guys. I think they love him. He understands the Boomers culture. He's been around it. He was my head coach in 2004 in Athens and 2008 in Beijing. So he knows what it's about. He knows about the whole mentality, the Boomers culture. I think, you know, speaking to him, he's really kind of engulfed in how much the Boomers culture has even gotten more passionate and more kind of forward thinking to try and win. And when he was around the national team, it wasn't, you know, so much a goal as going into tournaments thinking we're going to medal. It's medal or bust. That wasn't really a mentality in 04 and 08. It was more, you know, almost making up the numbers. We steal a game here or there. We're having a party. Whereas now it's like, no, like we want to go undefeated and have a medal around our neck. So I think he's enjoyed that mentality shift.
There's a lot to look forward to, I reckon, for both programs at the Olympic campaign coming up very, very shortly. And great to have your insight into the world of Milwaukee and what it means for the Bucks to win that championship for the first time in 50 years. Andrew, appreciate your time, mate. We'll do it again soon.
No worries. Cheers.